In the Big Money that we played in our break, that he was supposed to sing on Smothers Brothers, but the network stopped that song from being played. Ultimately, though, he was able to sing it there.
It took a while. What happened is that they cut away from Pete Seeger playing the banjo. Next thing you knew, he came back with a 12-string guitar. They made the edit a little awkward, so everybody would kind of know, I rather suspect, and Pete suspected too, that there had been some break there. There had been some change. Someone had gone in and cut something out. Eventually, yes, the next time, next year, times had changed. It was late in the 1960s during the protests against the Vietnam War. That song, Waist Deep in the Big Muddy, was an obvious allegory there. He got to sing the song.
We have to leave it there. But I want to thank you for being with us. David King Dunaway has made three major documentaries about Pete Seeger, historian and radio host. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today, we'll take on two topics. First, we'll discuss the DNC trying to shut out Bernie Sanders. Then, we'll examine the problem with our Constitution's protection of property rights.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the NARA New Year's Eve Sobriety Powwow on Thursday, December 31st from 1 p.m. to midnight at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Grand entry will be at 1 and 6 p.m. with honorings, Ed Goodell as the whip man, NARA All Nations Drum as the host drum, and MC Philip Archambault. Again, that's the NARA New Year's Eve Sobriety Powwow, Thursday, December 31st, from 1 p.m. to midnight at the Oregon Convention Center, Hall A and B, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
KBOO is proud to host the entire series of the podcast, The Spirit of the Forest, an audio drama, dark comedy, and semi-musical outsider art program. It's created by independent producer Dan Krall from Corvallis, and the program reflects upon the sadness, the absurdity, and normalcy of modern life. Listen to The Spirit of the Forest on demand at kboo.fm/thespiritoftheforest.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300.
Land is your land. This land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. This land is yours.
Yeah, yeah, this land is your land. Listen, that should be the national anthem. It really should. All this rockets, red glare, the bombs bursting in air, this incredibly militaristic song that is our national anthem, it's hard to even sing, is wrong-headed, wrong thought. Better to say, in a democracy, that this land is your land, that this land is my land, that this land is our land. And that's the theme that I want to play with a little bit today. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. And I'm coughing and choking, and this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Abe isn't here today. He's taking a well-earned rest. Sounds kind of scary. And we will be talking with you. Here's some things I want to try today, largely because I want to freshen things up a little bit, and I want you to help me with that, even if it means a little dead air occasionally. Here's two things. The first, and most important, is when you call, limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. It's only fair so that we can get more people calling and talking with us. The other thing is, if you called a lot and talked a lot, and I don't want to diss you in any way, but it would be good to hold back, at least till the second half of the show, to give opportunity to people who are crowded together and can't get into the airwaves. We have a very primitive, simple system. We're not like a commercial radio station with 7 or 8 lines where we can stack up calls, where the host can see on a computer screen who's calling, where they're calling from, what they want to talk about. We don't have any of that. So we fly by our own wings in a blinding snowstorm of ideas. And you need to help us do that. The number of calls, of course, to call is 231-8187. I want to talk about a couple, three things today. Actually, I was very impressed with the work of Bill Curry, a former advisor to Bill Clinton, talking about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, head of the Democratic National Committee. DNC is almost broke. In contrast to the Republican National Committee, which has boku bucks from very rich people who want to make America into something that will hardly resemble even what it is now. We did get a call from a Bernie Sanders volunteer who talked about phone banking for Bernie when the DNC shut him out of the databases. Now understand, this is something maybe people don't understand. The databases are generated by the various campaigns. They are stored and controlled, theoretically for fairness, by the DNC. What the DNC did in the Bernie Sanders case was, because there had been a leak, not clear exactly what happened there, but Sanders has fired the person allegedly responsible and is essentially suspended 2 other people. Because of that event, the Clinton campaign was able to accuse the Sanders campaign of stealing data. They later backed off of that, and Wasserman Schultz essentially shut the Bernie Sanders campaign out of its databases, which meant that all of the volunteers, and the volunteer numbers have been huge, couldn't really function well. And this is an important thing. It is an important thing because it gives enormous power to what I believe is a bias of the DNC heads for Hillary Clinton as presidential candidate. Having watched the debates, particularly the last one, it became very clear to me that Hillary Clinton really wants to have war, endless war, for the benefit of I'm not sure who. In contrast to Bernie Sanders, who recognizes the danger of ISIS or ISIL and wants to limit our war to that particular venue. And of course, the overarching truth of that is that all of this, all of the rise of ISIS, all of this stuff is directly due to the Bush invasion, the unwarranted invasion of Iraq, an adventure led by Dick Cheney. I just want to get that out of the way and make that clear. Now, it's also important to understand the degree to which the Democratic National Committee has become an insider organization looking through its own you-know-what at everything in the world. And this is very, very serious. What's amazing is the grassroots support that Bernie Sanders' campaign has generated. Now, I'm not supporting any candidate in this race. I got no dog in this fight. But I am appalled at the way in which this campaign is being waged. You know, the Democrats used to have numerous debates. But this year, as has been the case more and more every time, every 4 years, there have been fewer and fewer of these public debates. The six of this year, essentially two of which were held on the weekend. Listen, nobody watches TV. Hardly anybody watches TV on Saturday night. Certainly no younger people. And the fact of the matter is that the DNC has, in every opportunity, shut out the Bernie Sanders campaign. In fact, if you go, just randomly go to any major television station in the nation, never mind Democracy Now! Being an exception, if you go to any of those stations and you look for a word on Bernie Sanders, there won't be much. On the other hand, on Hillary Clinton, there'll be a lot. Now, you could say, well, it's an accident. People think, you know, she's the candidate, the anointed one. Blah, blah, blah. So that's their privilege. Well, how did that privilege happen? What makes her the anointed candidate? There's only one justification, which is, of course, that she is a woman, and it'd be nice to have a female president. But that ain't the key to good politics. That is not the way it ought to be. And in fact, Bernie Sanders has presented a social democratic alternative. And it's very popular, popular with younger people, popular with everybody. It's getting amazing amounts of money and, outside of the major media, a lot of attention. So burying that, denying its existence, pretending it's not important, has been a strategy of the DNC. And I think it's disgusting. And I think you should tell them it's disgusting, because the whole process has now become distorted in a terrible, terrible way. That's the first issue I want to cover. The second issue, and this is really important, is, and I'll be talking about this every day until the 5th of January, there will be a hearing in Vancouver, in Ridgefield, on January 5th from 1 p.m. to 11 p.m. with a big rally at 5 p.m. to in a major way emphasize the inadvisability, the stupidity of putting a huge oil terminal in Vancouver. Now, some things that maybe people have been missing. The recent budget changes the rules for the exporting of American oil and American all American petroleum products. This is really important, because suddenly there's markets for all this oil. And suddenly the oil industry is going, oh boy, this is going to be a lot better. Okay, this is really an important reality. And it fits in actually and absolutely with the plan to build this monstrous oil terminal with 1,450 rail cars of oil a week going up the Columbia Gorge, or rather down the Columbia Gorge and into Vancouver. This is a disaster in the making. This is not a good idea. This is not necessary. Unfortunately, the person who probably gets to decide this is the governor of Washington. How much influence you or I in Portland, Oregon can put on him is questionable. But the struggle must continue, and the fight must be strong. If you have any opportunity to go to Ridgefield on January 5th and testify, or just stand there with a sign or wear a T-shirt that says no oil trains, whatever, you really owe it to your children, to your children's children, to yourself, to everyone you know, to do that. And I'm pitching this hard because it's really, really serious. There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee that we can stop this. There is, however, a great likelihood that a huge stink, similar to the stink that will happen after they split open a couple of these oil cars, there needs to be a huge stink about this plan. This is a plan that will essentially put us forever into the great, great flow of things that should really stay in the ground. You can help. Everyone needs to do their part. this is a strong pitch, the strongest pitch I can make, to urge you to show up on January 5th in Ridgefield, Washington, to raise your voice and say, hell no, no oil trains on the gorge, no oil trains in Vancouver, Washington. And by the way, you will be joined by many, many people from the state of Washington. This is a consensus issue, which may not have the outcome that it ought to, simply because it ain't a consensus state. Now, that leads us to the next point. Thomas Lindsay, a very bright guy, talks about, in fact, he was on, I think, at Amy Goodman's show yesterday, talking about the reality of the Constitution and what it actually does. And this is important. This is a thing that people, you don't get in civics class in high school or something. Here's the deal. The U.S. Constitution, as you all probably know, was written by relatively wealthy people, largely merchants and plantation owners, many of whom were slaveholders. Now, they wrote a constitution that cuts out the ordinary man. They were very fearful of democracy. We like to talk about how it's a democracy and so on, but here's the deal. The original constitution, if you read it, excludes non-property holding people from being able to vote. It creates the whole process of creating a presidency that warps the process directly with the whole system. And it cuts out, of course, Native Americans, and of course, women, and of course, as I say, non-property holders, and of course, obviously, absolutely, no African Americans. This is a constitution of, by, and for the relatively wealthy in a nation state just starting out. It reflects the desires of those ruling class fellas always, to limit democracy in America. And over the years, through various struggles, things have changed. Things have improved. African Americans, though still very much shut out throughout the South and the Midwest by the Republicans, can and should vote. The fact of the matter is that women now have suffrage. They didn't get that till 1920. They can vote. That's really important. The fact of the matter is there is no property test for who can vote. That means anybody, rich or poor, gets one vote. One person, one vote. This has been a long, hard struggle, and it has not, by any means, guaranteed the safety, the sanctity of your vote. As I said earlier, every single state in the South and Midwest have created ways to limit access to the polls for poorer people and, of course, for African Americans. This is really important. If you can't absorb that, if you only buy into the myth of American democracy, then you just don't understand what the hell's going on. You're being fooled. You're being lied to, and you're being foolish. So that's what I had to say about that, and we'll come back to this. And then I want to talk about the DNC and the presumption that Hillary Clinton should be the candidate. During the debate, she essentially said she would wage endless war. She would initiate war against Assad in Syria. Now, Assad is not a fellow that I would want to have a drink with. I don't know if he drinks, but, you know, I'm not a guy I'd want to invite home for dinner. Not the sort of person I'd want to have any kind of social interaction with, and, in fact, a person who I politically would oppose. But we cannot, as a nation state, walk around the world deciding who gets to stay in power and who doesn't, what's a democracy and what isn't. It's an insane endeavor. We can lead by example, but we cannot lead through power. And we've done this mistake over and over again. In the 50s, we kicked out a legitimate elected government in Iran. The result we're seeing today, where we had the Iranian hostage crisis, where we're seeing this great fear of Iranian nuclear power. It goes on and on and on. Every one of the things we have done to control things have produced blowback, serious blowback. So I think that it's really important that we understand this as our base narrative, instead of going with the stuff you probably were taught in school by some teacher who probably didn't have much choice in what he or she got to tell you about. That's very, very important. So we got these three issues. We've got the need for you and everyone you know to absolutely show up in Ridgefield, Washington, on January 5th, from 1 p.m. to 11 p.m. and rallying at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, to demand that there not be 1,450 rail cars of oil a week. You know, that's how it is now. Oops, I was wrong. No, the new plan is 3,360 oil cars a week. 3,360 oil cars a week. It is a huge amount of fossil fuel, which, if it spills, and statistically some of it will, or explodes, we all will bear the direct brunt of that. This is a bad plan, and this is a plan that serves the oil interests. And it is now possible that the oil interests can make great deals of money because they can sell this fuel to India or China or wherever at a great profit. And the port of Vancouver is the port that has been chosen as the terminus for much of this fuel, including the deadly Bakken fuel. I mean, this is really serious, really serious. Okay, that's the first issue. The second issue is really the fact that the Democratic National Committee has manipulated and in some manner that I don't quite understand, essentially kept, maybe this is like, you know, conspiracy, essentially kept the main news organizations, the main discussions in every newspaper, in every print media, and in all broadcast media, has essentially kept the Bernie Sanders message of social democracy. By the way, don't confuse that idea, social democracy, with the idea of socialism under the failed system of the Soviet Union and so on. We're talking about something that has worked in Scandinavia, that works in France, that works in Germany, that works to some degree in England. And it is a system that ensures democracy and is a system that guarantees everybody a fair chance. This is really important. This is really, really, really important. The other issue is the fact that we essentially, as a nation, have shut out the reality of democracy in favor of a system that offers great destruction to the environment. Great destruction. And Thomas Lindsay is one of my heroes in this context. So I open it up to you. And again, I want to remind people, so that we can maybe have a little more open conversation, that if you are a regular caller, you know, use your conscience, maybe back off for the early part of the show, and absolutely, let's keep calls to 3 minutes each. That way more people can talk and more opinions can be exchanged. So 231-8187, those are the topics. We really want to hear from you. Hi, who we got? Paul, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
So, can we talk about the ugly side of politics for a moment?
3 minutes worth. Go for it.
Well, money.
Money.
Money is what wins campaigns, unfortunately, in our system. But everybody within the sound of our voices who wants to see Bernie Sanders get elected can give him a loan of $50 this year, and they'll get the money back next year when they do their taxes.
Really?
Yeah.
This is a true thing.
It's a true thing. And you actually get the money back.
Okay, I have to make one thing clear because of the rules of KBOO. I, as a programmer here, cannot support any candidate. We're just not allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
So while I can talk about these issues, I cannot say, I am not allowed to say, vote for this person versus that person. Go ahead.
So if people want to see Bernie Sanders get elected.
Yeah.
And they write a check to Bernie Sanders' campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And get it in the mail this year.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Oregon will give you $50 back. You can write more if you want. They'll give it back when you turn in your taxes, okay?
Okay.
So you can do your taxes on January 2nd, and probably about the end of February or March, you'll get the money back. So it's very like a 60- or 90-day loan. Just make sure, go to this website, and I don't know what it is or anything, but you go.
No, I think anybody with a computer can find the Bernie Sanders website.
But when you do it, you have to include your name, your address, your employer, and your phone number.
Okay, and I have to remind people of something very important, another restriction that I face because we're a nonprofit and so on. We can't fundraise for any candidate. Now, a caller like you can That's the rule. You call us up and you say, I want people to give money to who and so. That is okay. I can't say this is a great idea.
Yeah, but the thing is, the state of Oregon thinks at one time thought that everybody should be involved in politics.
Yeah.
And everybody should have a voice.
So, well, that I'm in favor of. That I can support.
So if somebody's in favor of Bernie Sanders, they can write a check to Bernie Sanders today or next week, do it before the end of the year for $50, and send it in, and they'll get their money back. And Bernie Sanders just might have a chance of winning, and maybe we won't have to look at our grandchildren going off to war to fight another endless war for the next 100 years.
Well, I have to say, and this is something I can say, that I was watching the debate last Saturday. I was just really discouraged by Hillary Clinton's essential support of what I consider to be the Bush-Cheney bad agenda of regime change throughout the world. This is not the role of the United States. It should not be a role, at least. And I think that that what, under her leadership as Secretary of State, we saw the disastrous consequences of messing with North Africa. I really believe that the United States needs to fight ISIS, ISIL, whatever, which was created directly by because the United States invaded Iraq. We made that happen. But, you know, I don't want to...
If you don't want to perpetuate the Clinton-Bush chain, revolving chain of presidents, then you can send a check to Bernie Sanders for $50. Or even send more, but you'll get $50 back. It's a direct tax credit. It's not a tax deduction.
Oh, you're talking about the tax credit. Yes, of course.
So the state of Oregon will pay you that money back.
Ah, I get it.
You want to exercise democracy.
Okay.
Because the sad fact is that it takes money to get for people to get
okay,
elected.
I got to let you go. You're at or over your time. I also have this, which was handed to me by my producer. He says the DNC cut Bernie off. This is his opinion. This is his opinion because he raised 300,000 signatures in 24 hours on an online petition to the DNC, asking them to play fair and give equal time and resources to Bernie Sanders. Now, the Democratic National Committee should have as its primary task enabling its candidates for president opportunities to present their arguments and their positions. And that is, I really believe, not something that is happening at this point. So it's very disappointing. But amazingly, all kinds of people hearing the social democratic message of Sanders seem to be giving money. So what do you know? So we got the oil trains. We got. I'm urging you very much to participate in demonstrations and support for not having the oil trains terminal at Vancouver. The time again is January 5th. Anytime, all day from 1 to 11, you can testify. And at 5 o'clock, there's going to be a rally. All of this in Ridgefield, Washington, which is kind of a cool town. Okay, that's that. And I am also emphasizing that we need to give up our kind of mythic notion that the creation of this nation was the creation of a democracy. What it was the creation of the potential for an oligopoly, essentially of the rich and wealthy, excluding persons of color, Native Americans, of course, women, and people who didn't have any property. And through long struggle by people just like you, we have improved that to a great extent, but there's still all kinds of barriers thrown up to keep people who are poor or who are persons of color from voting, and we're still seeing that. And we all need to understand that. And we need to get rid of the mythology that it's all cool. It isn't all cool. There can be a better system. But right now, that ain't the case. So I'm opening the phone lines for you. I'm asking you to keep your calls down to 3 minutes, and I'm welcoming particularly new callers. 231-8187. Joe, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks.
You have a great name, by the way.
Thank you. You do too. That was a great segue to the point that I wanted to make,
okay,
which is really just kind of an observation, a feeling I'm giving voice to that happened with your opening remarks about Woody Guthrie's famous song, This Land Is Your Land. And it's a song that I grew up loving, as a lot of people did, just because it's a good song. Mm-hmm. But I've also, as I've grown up and learned about the history of the United States, have come to kind of feel not disdain, but just something a little icky about saying this land is your land, this land is our land, because I think that that draws on a settler colonialist mindset that there was no one here and that this land is just for us, when really it's not for anyone, which if you listen to the original recordings, what he kind of suggests when mm-hmm. he talks about the sign that says private property and the other side, which doesn't say anything is for us. Mm-hmm. But that always, you know, didn't get airplay because it was the too radical one. But even then, Woody Guthrie's kind of whole repertoire drew very heavily on kind of American, not exceptionalism, but kind of a certain American identity that didn't really go further back than Woody's generation, it felt. And sometimes that has felt icky to, like, be kind of mindlessly joyous about.
Well, I think we need to consider the time. I think the Roosevelt administration was the last great thrust towards social democracy in the United States, although Truman tried to some extent as well. And we see, as we look at American history, how that was blocked in a variety of ways. And now, what passes for a Democratic president, Bill Clinton, for example, essentially gives away the store. And it is a very disturbing reality. There is no legitimate social democratic left movement that has a political party of its own. That's why it's so interesting to watch the grassroots uprising of people who are supporting Bernie Sanders. Anyway, I appreciate your call, and talking a little bit about that song is a good idea. Thanks for the call, man. All right, 231-8187. The issues, the reality of American history, what the Constitution really does and what it doesn't do, the fact of the limitation of the debates down to 6 by the Democratic National Committee, 2 of which are on the weekend. Hey, I don't know about you. I do not generally sit around watching debates on a Saturday evening, although I did this time. The fact of the matter is that the Democratic Party, the Democratic National Committee, seems to be wanting Hillary, and seems to be not wanting Bernie Sanders, who represents what was so significant in the Democratic Party during the Roosevelt administration, and to some degree by some candidates afterward. That is really important. And of course, the question of shipping oil in trains, along the Columbia Gorge, the beautiful gorge, and then terminating that shipping at Vancouver, putting it on huge ships and sending it down the Columbia, out into the ocean, and to China or whomever was willing to pay for it. That is extremely important. So we have the constitutional issue. We have the question of how the Democratic National Committee is treating Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton, and of course, the oil. I want to hear from you, 231-8187. Tony, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Joe. I have comments on everything you're bringing up, but I specifically want to talk about the Ridgefield terminal, because I do think it's probably the most important environmental thing that's happening right now. I don't know if you brought this up earlier. I tuned in late, but that oil tanker, the truck that ran off the highway into the cars there. I had a picture from across the river, and it was almost an omen. You could see the, like, 8 train cars. Mm-hmm. They weren't carrying oil, but they certainly could have been. Mm-hmm. And it just showed me how vulnerable this whole thing is. I mean, who expected a truck to go off the bank, you know, and mm-hmm. run into them? So I really encourage people to fight this thing. And I also would like your comment on the TPP and how how that will affect, once that goes into effect, how that will affect any of the protests that will happen against the terminal. So that's all I have to say.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad you brought up the TPP. I don't want to drop it. I don't think it's a done deal. If we, all of us, raise our voices against it, I still believe in democracy, and I still believe that we should be opposing the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's a bad deal. It's a Clinton-esque, disgusting event. In order for us to do that, though, we have to all arm ourselves with facts and go hard against what is already planned and is considered a done deal. It's not a done deal. maybe it'll happen. But we, all of us, can raise our voices, make it very awkward, very difficult, and perhaps undo what the Obama administration, essentially following the standard line of the Democratic Party, is planning to do. Now, what the Trans-Pacific Partnership does is it takes the ability of citizens like you and I, of governments, of agencies concerned about environmental issues or labor issues, and it takes away from all of us our ability to make things fair in the international marketplace and puts it in the hands of the very people who get to make those decisions, because they are the wealthy, the powerful, and the private sector. This is really serious. It is terrible to do away with a judicial process to protect the fairness of trade. And this is what this thing does. And essentially, it means for labor, for organized labor, and for just ordinary working people, that wages will always be limited. Pardon me, I have a cold. Yeah, labor will always be limited, will always be restricted, will always be bruised and battered by the powerful and the rich. So if you got things to do, one of the things you ought to put on your list is opposing loudly and long the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So I'm really glad that was brought up. We will talk about that some more at other times. So again, we're talking about the oil trains and the importance of showing up on January 5th at Richfield, Washington. If you can't do that, the letters you write are very important. Standing up to oil, really a crucial matter. From 1 p.m. to 11 p.m. and, of course, a rally at 5 p.m. in Richfield. Well, great. Richfield, wow, you know, a great place to go. Let's make it crowded. That's on the 5th. Now, I also wanted to talk about something that's more theoretical in many people's mind, but the reality of what this nation was created for, not for the you and me's, but for the wealthy and the elites. Now, the Constitution and the struggle of the people have opened up the nation. But we are seeing the disenfranchisement of African Americans throughout the South, and the Supreme Court, essentially by creating enormous wealth, legitimizing wealth's involvement with politics, and restricting access to the voting booth, essentially reestablishing a very reactionary system for control of the country. We also see the Democratic National Committee, and this is the other point, in an obvious effort to silence the Bernie Sanders campaign for president. And yet the Sanders campaign has gained enormous support among younger people and among everybody. If you're going to have a fair election, let's have a fair election. 231-8187. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi.
I
think you really hit on it this morning in picking topics that are big and powerful and all interconnected to what you mentioned as the history lesson. A country of great freedom was created by a large number of wealthy white men 230 years ago. The situation today with the TPP,
mm-hmm.
with a big power bringing on the coal train, the oil trains,
mm-hmm.
is really an example of the lesson we almost learned from Occupy, that our society has an immense long list of problems. We can't apparently really solve them. And with stopping and thinking about it, we can see why we can't solve them. We can't solve them because 0.01% of the wealthy and the people of wealth and great and established power can't make money at solving. If we make public decisions that actually solve human problems, they only allow Congress and state legislatures and city councils to make those decisions that either don't cost them money or help them make more.
I want to thank you very much. I agree with your points. I'm really glad you called. I want to let you go, but I also want to say that Thomas Lindsay, Environmental Legal Defense Fund, makes the point that cities and counties and states can pass ordinances that challenge the current assumptions, and that this is a process maybe determined by the courts to be invalid, but not so far. And this is a process where a city like Portland could really pass a resolution decrying the situation and limiting the destruction to the environment or to the people through trade and other agreements. This is something that's very important. By the way, I was handed this. Listeners need to think about organizing. Maybe this will already happen. It's a little early. Organizing, maybe a Sierra Club or somebody will do it. Organizing carpools to Richmond. It's a drive. It would really be cool. Maybe a couple of buses. I mean, this is showing up in large numbers is very important. But it's also important to realize that the governor of Washington has the ultimate say in this matter. And he's not exactly easily reachable, you know? And that's not an accident. That's the way the system is made to work. But this is a very important issue. And gaining enough attention, decrying the issue loudly enough, ensuring that the oil train impact is not gone without a comment. You know, again, remember the just passed budget, which contains all kind of bad thing. One of the all kind of bad thing that it contains is essentially opening up oil trade. Previously, American oil was to be kept here so we could, I guess, power our ships and so on. But now it's going to be saleable on the open markets to countries all over, which means that there's a new market for all the stuff that should be kept in the ground. And really, the plan for Vancouver, also one in Coos Bay, several places, is to ship oil and various fossil fuels out to countries that can afford to pay for them, and those countries can then burn them and can poison the environment. The only solution to fossil fuels is really to develop alternate ways of providing energy, wind, solar, and so on. And we really should be keeping all these fuels in the ground. They just are so toxic, so deadly, so awful. So that's that. Now, remember, I'm asking people to keep their comments to 3 minutes, and if you've called a lot, maybe hold back. Let's go to our next caller, 231-8187. BT, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Joe. I just wanted to say quickly, you know, I've been waiting for a chance to mention this for some years, and every time I hear one of the hosts or a caller on KBOO say that the original Constitution had the property requirement and all that. It does not have it. What existed were in state constitutions, some of them, not all of them, and maybe most of them, had a requirement like that. It may not have had it. It may have been they may have been like as variations of the same, but they all did not have that. And the Constitution was just silent on it because, after all, these colonies, states existed before. So
I'm not sure. I don't think that's right. I don't have a Constitution right in front of me.
Well,
in fact,
also a thing about the only white people can vote. Well, if you look at it carefully, it doesn't really say that anybody can vote. So they could have denied the vote to white men and had no one vote, and that would have been, according to, you know, it all depended on the states. If black people did vote in a number of states from the beginning, and a lot of them, including the southern ones like North Carolina, even some northern ones, they began to crack down on that in the early 1800s. But right in the very beginning, there were black people who were voting in this country. So the Constitution did not
say that
only white people, white men, can vote.
I don't.
You guys need to quit spreading that crap because all these bobblehead morons keep repeating it without
themselves. The way in which the calculation was made for how states would be apportioned their representatives included the idea that three-fifths of a person would be what a slave would represent. You catch me at a moment when
that's slaves. That's not free blacks.
There weren't many free blacks, man.
There were. I don't know how many there were, but there were quite a few, and some of them voted in for the Constitution at the constitutional conventions of the various states to approve it. You can check.
Okay,
that.
I will check that. I can't.
The
I can't.
Three-fifths was about slaves.
Yeah. I can't respond to this right now. You catch me flat-footed.
So read it and just quit spreading that nonsense.
Well, I don't think it's nonsense, but I will do this. I will read the Constitution very carefully and get back to everybody on this next week, but I think I'm right. Okay, thanks for the call, man. 231-8187. Who do we got? Who? Bart.
Those regular guys.
Sorry. Okay.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I haven't heard everything that was said, but early on you said 1,450 rail cars of oil a week through the gorge. That is the current flow.
Yeah, I made a mistake. It turns out it's 3,360 under the new plan.
Correct. And that all of those rail cars coming here, besides the giant mess they will make in terms of access in and out of the city, emergency vehicles, etc.
Well, just a school bus trying to get across a grade corp crossing will have to wait a long time.
Sure, and there are whole neighborhoods that are close to the river that are on the other side of the rail lines.
Yeah.
Not all of them would be considered the wrong side of the track because some of those are pretty big homes. But the other problem with this is that once it gets into Vancouver, even assuming nothing happens to any of the trains, even assuming that nothing happens in Vancouver, that you're loading them on really large ships and then taking them out the Columbia River. The Columbia River bar is one of the most dangerous river to ocean access points in the world.
That's true.
And it's not a joke to say that any issue anywhere in the river or in the access to the ocean is going to be a huge, huge problem.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's really a bad idea. And again, the budget compromise that's just been passed essentially creates motivation for this to happen because it changes a rule that allows American petroleum products to be sold on the world market.
Let's go backwards a little bit. The reason that that is in here now, the reason that that is part of the budget and was recently passed under kind of under the radar, is that there is a big flat spot in the world petroleum market that people have not been using enough oil here, and that the fossil fuel industry is always hungry for new markets, and this is one they think they can get away with. And you know, it's follow the money, you know, the palms that are being greased all the way and up and down politically, and the decisions that are being made, you know, and influenced by lobbyists at the top are not in our interest, and they do not consider the care and feeding of the environment or the American people as an important consideration.
I agree with you. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to give someone else an opportunity. I'm asking people, by the way, this is no dissing of any of the calls. I'm asking people to kind of keep their comments to 3 minutes, and particularly people who don't call us a lot calling in today, give us a chance. I also going to ask my staff out here, I need a constitution. If there happens to be somebody around here in the studios who has a large dictionary or a history book or whatever with a copy of the Constitution, I need it right now. But maybe that won't be possible. I'll have to get back to you on it. I'm damn sure I'm right. But it's nice to quote the document itself. 231-8187. We're talking about several things. We're talking about the oil trains and the protest and testimony that happens January 5th in Richfield, Washington. And, of course, I assume the various environmental groups will be organizing carpools, maybe even taking buses down there. Now, again, that decision, the public awareness, and maybe getting some of the press to pay attention, maybe some of the TV news stations, although usually they have a lost dog story in preference to real news. That is a very important event on January 5th in Ridgefield. And there's actually a rally at 5 in the evening. And the whole testimony opportunities is from 1 to 11, actually 11 p.m. This is a very important event. The governor, unfortunately, the governor of Washington gets to make the decision. Oh, somebody just handed me a constitution. Oh, this is so cool. Thank you. Oh my goodness, I'm not going to find this right now.
Bigger text.
Wow. Okay. We're looking. My able producer is looking.
You can just two fingers.
Okay.
Two fingers.
Oh, whoa. Mr. Computer Illiterate. Can you find the thing I need? I'm struggling to make sure I'm right. And I'm sure I'm right. But I'm asking my producer to make sure I'm right. Okay, we're talking about the Constitution. 231-8187 is the number to call. We're also talking about the issue of the Bernie Sanders candidacy and how it's being consistently blocked by the Democratic National Committee under Debbie Wasserman Smith, Schultz, pardon me, and how it is a dubious process at best, and how it is that all the national news agencies don't seem to have time to talk about Bernie Sanders or the ideas he represents in running for president. And the amazing fact that he is extremely popular, that he may well win the New Hampshire primary. And you know, hey, guess what? Given an opportunity, people kind of vote smart, given the opportunity. So there's that. There is also this question of what the hell the nation is really about. And then, again, the oil issue. So I do want to hear from you. 231-8187. Do we have a person? My producer's doing double duty here. Marilee, who wants to talk about carpooling.
Yeah, this is Marilee, and I'm with the Climate Action Coalition, and we have a bus running, and we're also doing carpooling. So here is the number.
Okay.
503-705-1943.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that. 503-705-1943. Is that right?
Yes, and we want everyone to wear red.
Okay, carpool and wear red. Woo!
It's at the Clark County Fairgrounds in Richfield.
That's the event, you mean?
Yeah, that's okay. The venue.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. You've just been great on this show about Tesoro. It's really important. We need to have Portland and all the KBOO listeners go.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that the company involved is Tesoro. It's a very important fact.
Savage.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. So, again, if you're interested in carpooling or whatever, call 503-705-1943. Whoa, you got to be on the air, Steve. What a crazy day. All right. Steve is looking and madly looking at the Constitution. I think we got Mike on the air. Hey, Mike, you're on the air. Not Mike. We got not Mike. Who do we got? Harry, you're on the air, man.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to talk about the oil export ban.
Absolutely.
One of the things. I hope everyone realizes this means the increase in gasoline prices. In Europe, gasoline is like $7 to $8 a gallon. So we should be about that price maybe in about a year.
So you saying the goal is to raise the price of gasoline, thereby raising the profit of the oil industry?
Exactly, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Oh.
The next thing is the about Bernie Sanders is that not to bring up the subject, could it be anti-Semitism?
I actually don't think that's the issue.
Oh, okay, but because there's an article in Media Matters that said ABC News. In the last since these elections, covered Bernie Sanders for let him speak on ABC News 3 minutes. Donald Trump, 485.
Wow. Well, that is. I don't think that has to do with anti-Semitism, but it definitely has to do with media bias. And I'm glad you made that point.
Okay. One last thing is, I was hoping maybe once a month on your show, maybe the second Tuesday of the month or something like that, that you have an open phone line so we can talk about politics and stuff that KBOO and you can't. We have the governor's race coming up.
Yeah.
We have the mayor's race coming up. We have elections coming up that we, you know, most media won't cover what we have to say. Or
well, I think it's a good idea, but we try to do that. Here's the deal. Here's the rule. Under the rules of a nonprofit like KBOO, we cannot advocate for any candidate for any office.
Well, you don't have to.
No, let me finish. But anytime anyone wants to make a statement in favor of a candidate on the phone lines, that's an open opportunity.
Good, good. That's why we need to open phone lines so we can talk about anything.
Sure.
Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. 231-8187. It's been a kind of crazy day here. I'm having a good time. I hope you are. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. The topics we're covering is the planned demonstrations and essentially public hearing about the oil terminal plan for Vancouver, a very bad idea, which will result in increasing the number of oil train cars from 1,450 to more than double that, 3,360 a week, 3,360 a week. It's gross and unfortunate and a bad idea. That's the issue that maybe occupies all our time. We'll be talking about it over the next few weeks. But also, the fact of the matter is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democratic National Committee seem to be making a lot of effort to keep Bernie Sanders under the cover. And it seems like all the national media, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, etc., all of them seem to be not really covering Sanders and his enormous popular success in this campaign for the presidency. Instead, the focus is on Donald Trump, who is probably the most bigoted candidate to run for president in a long, long while. All right, 231-8187. And then, of course, there's the idea of how the Constitution is set up. And I have sicked Steve on the process of finding the exact quote. And I feel unfairly that that's what one of the things he's working on. And I have a copy of the Constitution here, but I can't do this show and talk. 231-8187. Who do we got? Whoop. Pear, hey, how are you?
How you doing, Joe?
Pretty good.
Here's a question I don't see raised very much, is that, Russia and China have signed these, you know, multi-billion-dollar oil and gas agreements, mm-hmm. you know, and pipelines are crisscrossing the Asian continent. How are we going to compete with that? It seems to me that the, shipping oil and gas over there by these liquid tankers or whatever is a losing proposition, and all these terminals we're building are going to be what they call stranded assets.
Well, I don't know the answer to the question you raised, but it's certainly a valid...
Maybe someone should research that a bit or raise the issue.
Yeah, no, I think it's a valid point. I think that one of the things we need to understand is the planned Trans-Pacific trade deal is designed to facilitate the power of private enterprise and to degrade the power of nation states and states within nations. And this is a very bad trade deal. It's worse than NAFTA, and it is part of what I consider to be the so-called, and I'd say so-called, liberal conservative establishment. The neocon world of the Clintons and others, and I have to say Obama, sadly. So this is something that still should be fought. People should make their Congress people aware. And really, the requirement that the thing be voted up or down is outrageous. It means you can't adjust it.
Global trade is shrinking anyway. Look at the Baltic Dry Index. That's a measure of shipping trade, and
it's going
down like crazy. So I don't know. We're heading for a different world than what these people envision, you know. Anyway, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I have somebody handed me a note. Richmond's, the Richmond Center, just to make it easier, is at 179th and I-5. Not that far, actually. Not that far. And it's 180 blocks from the river, if you want to count them. You could walk it. Well, I don't know. Anyway. And remember, if you want a ride, if you need a ride to the action at Richmond for the oil trains, the number to call is 503 705 1943, and somebody will help you get into a carpool or a bus. This is a big thing. This is a big deal. I know the governor of Washington gets to decide, but the voice of the people must be heard. And maybe the media, which is busy talking about lost doggies, maybe it'll turn its attention to real issues. Hey, you've listened to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. It's been chaotic today, but I think really good. I hope you all enjoyed it. And you want to stay tuned for the best in public affairs and music here on KBOO. And give us some money. Why not?
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming.
Tune into Cable every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio. News and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D. Hard Knock Radio features in-depth interviews and profiles with community leaders, activists, hip-hop artists, and musicians, giving voice to community concerns and offering a unique forum to explore issues relevant to hip-hop community. That's every weekday at 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, journalist and author Loretta Napoleoni speaks on the ISIS crisis. At 10 on Flashpoints, Mark Ash of Reader Supported News discusses Saturday's Democratic debate. Also, excuse me, an